told you that I never would. I told you I'd change even when I.
This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
We won't be getting the final report from the LRT inquiry until after the municipal election. The commissioner leading the public commission into Ottawa's light rail transit system has gotten a three-month extension to finish the final report. The initial deadline for the final report was actually August the 31st, which was the end of this month. Now, as I said at the outset of the show, I think that was a little bit unrealistic because of the scope of what they have to do. They have to go in, they have to listen to all of the complicated, often very technical, filled with technical expertise and jargon, and understand all of the testimony, put that together with all of the different narratives and perspectives and the finger pointing, and then come out and boil that down into a final report and recommendations, because they're looking at, they're probing the circumstances that led to the breakdowns and the derailments of this system. Why is it that the launch ended up turning out the way it did? So I understand there's a lot of legwork to do here. And even actually, when I say that Justice William Horrigan has until November the 30th to submit the report, even that to me seems like a pretty tight timeline if you're doing all of this work and you're doing it correctly. But the thing about it is that it's not going to be done until after the municipal election, which is in October. Joining us right now, a member of the Transit Commission, City Councillor for River Ward, Riley Brockington, is on the line. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Christy, for having me on again. Appreciate it.
What do you think of the deadline being extended?
Well, no one and their brother believed, as you said in your introduction, that the original timelines were realistic, given the scope of this review and the amount of files that had to be reviewed and the number of witnesses that were anticipated to be interviewed. Even with the revised timeline, Christy, you have a public inquiry start to finish still in under 1 year. This didn't receive the go-ahead until December 16th of 2021, and still the timelines have a report coming out at the end of November of this year. I've always said it'd be great to have this before the election to give the public sort of the full idea of who did what during this process, but even more important is to get a thorough report with sound recommendations, which is what we want to see coming out of this report.
Right. And you know, when you talk about the recommendations, I think back to the complicated testimony. It's also worth noting that the commission received more than 550,000 documents related to the system.
Exactly. I know even months ago, before the public inquiry took off, the City of Ottawa was approached. It had to release a number of documents. There was a formal request that came in. All city councillors, current and many others, former staff and councillors were engaged as well. And I think at that point, only the City of Ottawa, not including everyone else that's involved, had submitted over 1 million pages of documentation. I suspect at the end of it, we're looking at multi-million pages of documents that are going to be part of this inquiry. So the fact that those would be reviewed, witness testimony, other documentation, all wrapped up in under a year, that's still a very aggressive timeline, in my opinion.
What do you want to see out of the final report? What questions do you have?
Let me break it down for you. When we look at the mandate of the inquiry, what was the inquiry supposed to do? It was to investigate the circumstances that led to the stage one breakdowns and derailments of the LRT line. And it's further broken down into four major components: the procurement process, the actual contract between the city and RTG, whether RTG did the actual work that it was supposed to do as outlined in the contract, and then was there proper oversight by the city during this process. And so the report is going to get into the specifics of those specific categories, and I suspect there'll be some sort of determination, but at the end of the day, there's going to be recommendations to ensure that where failures existed, those are identified, and it doesn't happen again.
But will there be, is this assigning blame? Is this going to say, the city did this, there was pressure, and the pressure came in this form, and this is why things were rushed? Or will it say, RTG is going to get this portion of the blame and this member of the city of Ottawa or this city staffer is going to get this assignment of the blame? How specific is it going to be?
I don't know, to give you a brutally honest answer. I do have a strong feeling this is more about providing recommendations to ensure that the process as a whole is improved significantly going forward.
AKA, so we don't rinse and repeat and do the exact same thing
exactly,
again.
Exactly.
But are we not too far gone at that point on LRT stage two?
No,
I mean,
we're
at the point where we already know it's delayed a year. We just found that out, the Western extension. Are we not too far deep to be receiving this report in November?
I don't think so. I think, first of all, the public deserves answers. That's very important. This is public process with taxpayer money. They deserve answers. Whatever that can be used for stage two and future stages, obviously there's talk of stage three. Western end is important, but also project management in general. You can apply lessons learned to other projects, but at the end of the day, the public is hungry for some answers, and we have an independent commissioner providing this inquiry.
But they're not going to get it before they decide who they're electing. And I said at the outset, I understand what's realistic and what's not when you have hundreds of thousands of documents and you have hours and hours of testimony. So I get it. But at the same time, is it not essential that people have this information, that they're armed with it before they go and vote?
Well, that's not going to happen. So folks have two, I guess, main additional sources. One, they can, better understand the testimony that was provided during the public inquiry, or they can ask candidates, particularly incumbents, who have been around, very pointed questions. What role did you have in the following? And allow that candidate to reply. So that's the best that I guess can be leaned on at this point, since the report, final report, will come out after the election. But if you have an incumbent candidate that is coming knocking at the door and LRT is, you know, a major issue for them, don't hold back. Ask questions. What was their role? And get your money's worth.
Hearing all of the testimony, though, still waiting on the final report and the recommendations, Councillor, who do you believe at the City of Ottawa bears responsibility for what has happened?
Well, I didn't follow the testimony every day, so my day is quite busy, but I certainly followed a fair bit and certainly read as much as I could in the media. I don't think it's any one person. I think the recommendations, again, I don't know if it's going to focus on person or entity as opposed to here's where the breakdowns or failures happen. This is how we improve going forward. It's absolutely not one person. I think it's a collection of many missteps. But again, I'm looking for the independent report to come out and we'll go from there.
Was there anything that took you by surprise?
That's a good question.
Or was there a bombshell in there? Was there a moment where you said, oh, there it is?
I think that actually the last time you and I spoke, we may have talked about testing. Mm-hmm. The original commitment of 12 consecutive days of basically flawless service.
Which we never got.
That's right. And the back and forth about how eventually it looked like the city was willing to amend the criteria to, lower the criteria to get a pass, to get this through. There was some back and forth about who was really the person asking, and that was never disclosed to council or the Transit Commission. And so I'm sure there were a lot of surprises that I can raise over reflection, but that was one of them for me was, we have a responsibility to ensure the line is safe. Safety is number one. We just don't say it. I firmly believe that. And when you publicly release test results, you want to be able to go back to the public and say, you know what, we had these high standards and they passed. And we feel confident that we're now accepting a system that will function safely and function well. So, you know, there's a lot of things I heard, but certainly that was one of them that stuck with me.
When you look back at it and you think about all the problems that it had, the sinkhole, the construction delays, the series of breakdowns, the flat wheels, the computer glitches, the jammed doors, two derailments, not one, but two. And then one of them was a massive shutdown for this system. When you heard what you heard, did that all make sense to you? Like, was did that remove the mystery of what is wrong with this system, given a sense of now you understand how it came to be and how it was launched?
Christy, let me just say I remain very disappointed about how we were all looking forward to this major public transit infrastructure opening. We went through multiple years of significant detours and grief and pain and suffering for riders and even our operators who were asked to work significant overtime to make the system work, which I sincerely appreciate. And when the time came, it wasn't shortly thereafter that these significant problems occurred with the system. And our goal was to grow ridership. That has not happened. Our goal, of course, was to increase public confidence in public transit across the city. That is severely fractured. There's significant work that needs to be done. So I understand on large infrastructure projects, there are challenges, there are problems. I think that that reasonably has to be expected. But I just remain disappointed about how this has happened, the impact it's had on the people of Ottawa. Obviously, I want to look forward and make sure that future phases are successful. Yeah. And we really, public transit needs to be successful in the city.
Yeah.
We need to have public transit that works to be a viable city. So that's what I'm looking forward to going forward.
And I'll say today, because I was driving bright and early this morning in the parking lot that is Ottawa because of the 417 closure, even before 7 this morning, it took me 30 minutes to get to my destination before 7 a.m., and coming into work this afternoon, it was a breeze taking the bus and the LRT. So I would like to be a cheerleader for this system. It's not that I'm always over here and I'm trying to drag it down. I use it every day. But that being said, we heard a lot of very disappointing, as you described it, things through this public hearing. I just want to ask you one more question, which is, do you think there was political pressure here? Because on the one hand, you had the former rail director admitting on the first day of the public hearings that the decision to bump it up in time for Canada Day, that it wasn't coming from the experts. On the other hand, you had the city's director of rail operations denying that there was political pressure. Do you believe there was pressure from the city?
Yeah, it depends what the, how you define political pressure. I just can't accept the fact that with all the delays that we've had and the desire to see this open and not have it open in the winter, you don't want to open a line in the winter, that there weren't some conversations that went along the lines of, well, I really need to get this opened. We really need to get this open. We really need to get it open by the particular date. So I can't imagine those types of conversations not happening, but I certainly heard some of the testimony where people full out denied that that was the case or they ever felt pressure from any politician. But we all wanted to see the line opened. We were very disappointed with the multiple delays. But at the end of the day, we were also hearing the line wasn't ready yet to accept. And so you're disappointed, but you're also, all right, take the time that you need to happen. But we really would like to see this open. So I'm sure those conversations happened.
Councillor Brockington, thanks for the time.
Thank you, Christy. Always a pleasure.
Councillor Riley Brockington, Transit Commission member, River Ward councillor, speaking about the LRT public hearing and the report and recommendations that are going to come out of it. I'll tell you what, if I were John Mangoni, okay, in this make-believe world, and I'm the head of OC Transpo, and I'm sending messages saying, please, Mr. Mayor, I beg of you, I'm getting so many messages on multiple channels from your staff. We're drowning in message overload. To me, that feels like pressure. Would you classify it as political pressure? The mayor said the WhatsApp group wasn't a decision-making body. It was a communication tool, though, and he was communicating, air quotes, a heck of a lot. 322.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back, 326. Welcome back to you, but also welcome back to Puppets Up Festival, which is going to be back on the streets of Elmont this weekend after a hiatus. This is a big deal. And it's not just a hiatus because of the pandemic. It's returning after 6 years, this festival. Jane Torrance is on the line right now, executive director. Hi, Jane.
Hi there. How are you?
You must be very excited. It's been quite a long time.
I am so excited. We're in the middle of day one. We've got crowd. We have tents full of people enjoying puppet shows here in Elmont because today is our opening day, and it's so much fun.
How has it been so far?
There's not a person without a smile. Put it that way. It's just we all have a permagrin on our face.
Now, I have to admit, Jane, I've never made it out to the Puppets Up Festival when it was last in season, when it was still on.
Oh, that's because you were just a child.
Oh, that's right. Yes. I was so young, I couldn't drive at that point.
Yes,
so
that's right.
That would be why. But for people who haven't been, what's it all about and where do the puppeteers come from?
Well, it's a puppet festival. It takes place in 5 theaters. We have theater tents set up around Elmont, and they're like those massive tents that look like a circus is going to happen inside. And 13 troupes coming from around the world, International Puppet Festival. One is from Iceland, one is from Indonesia, 3, I think, from the U.S., and the rest from Canada. One from Alberta and the rest from Ontario and Quebec, and one even local from Elmont. So they put on over the course of the weekend, there's 65 puppet shows, and you buy a bracelet to get into the, that allows you admittance into the theaters to have that with your bracelet.
From as far away as Indonesia, how did you get in touch with these puppeteers?
We have an amazing artistic director. Her name is Noreen Young, and she is a pretty famous puppeteer herself. You might remember her from Under the Umbrella Tree, and she's a Canadian treasure, I'd like to say. She has an Order of Canada, but I think that all puppeteers know Noreen because she has a reputation as a not as only as a great puppeteer, but also as a wonderful person. And people want to come and be with her, and it's a very small world, the puppet world, as far as the professional puppeteers. And she's always keen to get new talent, but to bring back old talent as well. Crowd favorites, I guess we call them.
Now, I actually do remember Noreen and Under the Umbrella Tree because that actually was the gig is up. I wasn't young 6 years ago, but I was in the 1990s. And that's when the children's television series created by Noreen was airing in Canada. However, I actually think back to before when the festival was on, when she was at Ottawa City Hall and she had the mini Jim Watson, which she presented to him, which actually really tickled me.
And there are so many lookalike puppets that she has.
Is that right?
Yeah,
who else is there?
There's me.
You've got your own puppet?
I have my own puppet. A lot of people in Elmont have their own puppets just because it's such a fun thing to do. But there are so many celebrities that have their own puppets and so many famous people. And some of them have asked Noreen to make them for them. And some of them she's just made and they become characters in various plays that with the Queen Victoria, when she shows up as a puppet. And anyway, they're always fun to have the real characters on a puppet show.
Okay, Jane, if people want to make it out, I'm running out of time. If they want to make it out, how can they get involved in this? How do they show up to the event?
Show up to the event. You can go online at puppetsup.com, buy your tickets in advance, or just come up and you can buy them here. There's lots of free stuff to do as well. We have great parades every day, lots of street entertainment. There's a kids craft tent that's so creative and fun. It's so lively in the streets. It's not just in the tents, it's around town as well. So lots of great stuff going on. I'd love to have all of Ottawa come to Elmont for the weekend.
Thanks, Jane. Take care.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Jane Torrance, Executive Director of Puppets Up Festival. I have to say, if somebody made a puppet of me, Christy Cameron, I don't know if I would be flattered or if I would be frightened. If it's like when somebody does a caricature of you, you never know if it's going to be fun or insulting. 3:30, your news is coming up now. Down in the deep when your brain goes numb, you can call that mental freeze. When these people talk too much, put that in slow motion, yeah, I feel.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA. You can call that mental freeze
when these people talk too much. 3:39, welcome back. The Great Resignation, the phenomenon of a lot of people during the pandemic deciding to leave their jobs because they were burnt out, or they decided they didn't like their jobs anymore, or they found a better job, or they went back to school, or they moved to another country and they found a job where they could do remote work. There's a whole myriad of reasons that people resigned during COVID-19, and even now as we try to recover. And the question is, what is going on right now in Canada? And this has been a big thing in the United States. But as one economist was writing in the Globe and Mail, what we're seeing right now is a different kind of great resignation, which is essentially a wave of early retirements. And this piece in the Globe was pointing out that there's been an exodus among the 55 plus population, that we're seeing more people that are leaving before the traditional age of 65, which was traditionally seen as the retirement age. What is going on here? Is this something substantial? Is this just a marker of the pandemic in some way and it's about to shift? Moshe Lander joins us, senior lecturer in economics at Concordia University. Good afternoon. Welcome back.
Hello.
What do you make of this?
Well, I don't think it's speaking to either you or I. I think we're still a few years away from this period. But
hey, now I'm decades on this end of the mic. I'm 31, so retirement is not even in my vocabulary, Moshe.
Yeah, and my savings account says that I'm also decades away as well. So. I think what's happening, though, is that people in their 50s and 60s are realizing that, you know what, they have enough to live on. They bought early enough in the housing market, right? If they're in their mid-50s now, they bought, say, turn of the century, and they probably made out pretty well on their home, that, you know, they realize that maybe they have enough assets that they can pitch it in. And I think that's partly a residual effect of COVID, too, that if not now, when?
That was the other thing I was wondering, is this going to be a temporary great resignation, 55 plus? Or is it like some people who are younger who then regret leaving their jobs and want to go back into the industry? I wonder if some of these people go into early retirement and then second guess it and come back.
Yeah, I mean, they might come back. I think the greatest driver of what makes you come back is either you need to find a purpose when you retire that gets you up in the morning, or you need to make sure that your bank account is good enough that you don't need to find that purpose, right? So if either one of those things goes sideways, then yeah, you can imagine that people might come back at some later point. But the great thing is now that the structure of the economy is much less reliant on farming and manufacturing. So you know what? People in their 50s still have their wits about them. They have their brains. They have years and years of intelligence locked up in their head from how to deal with clients and suppliers and things like that. And you know what? They should be able to come back much easier than somebody who decides that they don't want to work at the factory anymore and then realize that, oops, they need money, but their physical skills have eroded.
When you talked about your savings account, that got me thinking. I actually do wonder how many people are on the verge. So let's say maybe they're 50 or they're a little bit younger, in a couple of years might want to early retire, but are not able to because they didn't buy in at the right time and they don't have the money.
That's unfortunately the nature of the business cycle, right? You know, the stock market goes up, the stock market goes down. And it's one of those things that, you know, the ones that I really feel sorry for, the people who were, you know, planning in the next 2 years to pack it in and were basing it on what they were seeing in the previous decade of just continuous gains in the stock market, and then realized, oh, no, you know, that type of succession planning, even within businesses, can be a problem, too. Right. Because if you go to the boss and say, hey, my medium to long term plan is I'm not going to be working at this popsicle stand in the next 2 years. If they start looking for a replacement for you, this could start posing a problem logistically for them too. So it is an unfortunate situation. And this does happen about once a decade because, you know, stock markets go up and then they go down, and it's always going to pinch those people right at the moment that they're thinking they're safely out and realizing that I need to rethink this.
Moshe Lander, thanks so much.
Anytime.
Moshe Lander, senior lecturer in economics at Concordia University. It's 3:44. We are going to get to Time Saver traffic in a moment, but let's just talk about it. Because I've got Callum Fraser here, who's in the newsroom. This is a traffic story, which typically we would leave to Time Saver Traffic with Eric Fox today, but it is something that is impacting people across the entire city. And somebody actually just said, what happens if I'm driving from Orleans to Kanata? You know, my friend.
Oh my gosh.
I wish that I had something better to tell you other than good luck. It's really rough because of the first day of the highway closure, the first full day, I should say. Because it started last night, and it was to the point this morning, Callum. I got there on time, but I was going to a fitness class this morning. Usually get there nice and early. I left at 6:45 a.m. Normally a 10-minute drive. It was 30.
Well, this is the reason why I decided to sleep overnight north of Gatineau.
Oh, you
last
did.
Night.
You did go.
I
to
did
the
go. I did go. Yeah. People who were listening yesterday, my wife and her friends were renting a cottage for the week up in an hour and a half north of here. So it's a bit of a hike, but I was just thinking if I go back to Richmond last night, how long is it going to take me to get here in the morning? An hour and 15? Like, how much am I cutting off right there? So I was like, screw it. I might as well go take a dip in the lake, whatever.
Yeah.
And the drive in today, it was long, but no problems. So I understand, you know, people are, you know, dealing with, and it's the craziest thing is like, because the highway is such a major artery, mm-hmm. people are not just finding like little roads beside the 417 or trying to, you know, get cheeky with back roads and stuff like that. They are going to a hunt club. They're going all the way around. Some people are actually dipping into Gatineau. We had a call actually an hour ago of someone that said, hey, I was just trying to actually make my way into Gatineau because I'm afraid of the Sir John A. Macdonald Parkway, afraid of what's happening in Centertown right now. And here's a collision, but I only would have been there if I was trying to, you know, get creative with it. So right now, I mean, yes, of course, the streets around the highway, you know, Catherine, Chamberlain, Carling,
Preston
Bronson,
was really busy this morning.
Those are all really bad. But if you think that you're going to be able to, you know, smoothly and swiftly you know, rip down Hunt Club or Baseline or whatever, like it'll be better than some places, but it's not perfect. It's not a regular commute anywhere today.
So just if you're joining us, the basic information you need, the headline, if you didn't figure it out already, you didn't know because you didn't listen yesterday and you didn't know, you found out today, that's for sure. But Highway 417, if you're just waking up and you're on shift work, Highway 417 is closed. The whole highway is closed between Metcalf downtown and Carling Avenue in the West End because they're replacing the bridge over Booth Street. It started at 8 p.m. tonight and it's going until
6 a.m. Monday.
6 a.m. on Monday morning.
So hopefully right before we hit rush hour after the weekend, everything should be good to go. Doesn't always happen in this city.
There was a long lineup this morning to get off the highway before the closure a lot of people that were trying to exit off to get off before you hit the closure. And then the other thing that I noticed was that it was really busy when I was coming home from the class. It wasn't too bad. Once I got out of the parking lot on Catherine Street, Gladstone, all of those areas, Booth, Preston, Booth is shut down. But all of those areas in Little Italy and Centertown where it gets really clogged up, it was okay going to the West End on Carling, but on the other side of Carling coming in was really busy this morning because of the people that were heading downtown to work.
Yeah.
How is it out there this afternoon? It's still pretty
not good. Again, I'm not really focusing on the areas around the highway when we're looking to see like what's clogged up, because that's going to be, if you're looking on, you know, Google Maps to see congestion, that's going to be the darkest red no matter what. It's kind of just a layup. I'm looking at, there's a few, you know, really, really trouble intersections on roads like Hunt Club, and Baseline is much worse. We're seeing more and more congestion on the Sir John A. Macdonald Parkway. It actually wasn't that bad before like 2:30. That was actually one of the areas that had really gotten a lot better. But it seems like now there's just not a lot of good options. And Christy, I think we're seeing a bit of an abnormal number of collisions actually today, because there are so many more cars that are going through intersections. They might be a little frustrated driving above the speed limit because they just want to get home. Mm-hmm. You know, they're really annoyed by this. So, I mean, a tip, be alert, drive with caution, because we're seeing quite a few collisions in places that we actually don't normally see them.
Yeah. So text us if you're out there. Let us know what the conditions are looking like for you and how this has impacted your day. Thanks for that, Callum. Appreciate it. Callum Fraser from the newsroom. That actually is our question of the day.
Question of the day on News Talk 580 CFRA.
How has the highway road closure today impacted your plans, your commute, your job, anything that you're getting up to this weekend? You had plans to drive around. I don't know how I feel about it tomorrow. I was thinking about coming downtown tomorrow, but I don't really know if I want to deal with it. Getting around on transit today worked pretty well for me. Because, again, taking the LRT, you're not on the road. But it was pretty rough in and around Catherine Street. How was it for you this morning, Chris?
It was all right this morning. It worked out well because really didn't have to go too deep onto the highway.
Yeah, that's the thing. And actually, for Danny, you were coming in from the south end.
Yeah, so it was actually a pretty smooth ride in from the south end, but I don't know from the west end. I'm right near the airport.
It was slower, for sure, for sure. Jeff, the grumpy Uber driver, just texted in and said, I never say this, but tip your Uber drivers this weekend, people. Most will be making less than minimum wage. They are paid by distance, not by time. If the ride normally takes 10 minutes, they don't get paid extra if the ride ends up taking 40 minutes. They average 70 cents per kilometer if you drive 10 kilometers across town and it takes 45 minutes. They make seven, I don't know what, this is a weird emoticon here, but just saying they're making less minus their own cost of gas. And the text message split up, but Jeff is basically just saying, be aware, people that are driving right now, they're probably pretty frustrated. And this is on top of the fact that it's taking them longer, they're not getting paid what they'd like to be getting paid. And there's already been all these road closures, all these ramps that were closed downtown. So it feels like a maze driving through downtown Ottawa right now. It already felt like that a bit, but even more so.
If you can avoid it, please do.
If you can avoid it, or if you can go on foot.
Yeah.
Or if you can go early.
Or maybe for people.
Give yourself lots of time.
For people on the outskirts, like living in Russell, Embrun, Castleman, maybe one option, like if you do need to get to the West End, maybe hop off and go to Mitch Owens and go through Manotick and like that, veer back into the city. That would be like, it'd be a little more quiet, like a bit more of a distance, but at least you're rolling.
Let us know. That's our question of the day. How are the closures impacting you? The main closure obviously being the 417.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Oh boy, somebody just said it took 2 hours to work. 2 hours to work because of the 417 closure. And then they said on the way back, it's been an hour so far, but still a ways to go. And then the other thing that was coming up is I was just thinking, you've already had the closure of the downtown highway. Like if you're trying to go westbound, for example, and you used to be able to get off downtown and then get on, now you can get off downtown, but you have to get back on at Rochester to go west on the 417. So people were already dealing with the construction there. And now the 417 is shut down, which is a major, major route for so many people, and everybody is on the Sir John A. Macdonald Parkway and on Carling, and people are trying to figure out how to navigate this. And then at the same time, Chris, you've also got the early closure of LRT because they're doing the maintenance and they've aligned all of these things to be happening around the same period because the LRT isn't closing entirely, but it's going to be closing early in August, and they're putting in the R1 bus service, and that is today at 8 p.m.
Oh, man.
August the 12th to the 15th.
Great timing.
Typically, on a Friday, it would run until 2 a.m., and it's closing at 8 p.m.
Now, I was tipped
up. It seems silly, right? Because then you'd say, well, oh, I'm not going to take the bus, or I'm not going to take my car. I'll take the bus, or I'll take the LRT home. No, you won't. You'll be taking an R1 bus.
Or you can walk.
Which we know that I did after Blues Fest. Oh. One hand in my pocket. Quite literally. And also singing the song from Alanis' concert. Not good timing, right?
No.
Not good timing. Somebody said, why on a Friday? Couldn't they wait till tomorrow? I guess they needed all the time for the bridge replacement. 4 p.m. Your news is next.